Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is Somewhere in the Skies with Ryan Sprague.
Guys, it is Ryan Sprague from Somewhere in the Skies, and I am very excited about today's interview. I have been waiting a long time, as most of you have, for this film to come out. It is probably one of my most favorite cases that I turn people to when it comes to the close encounter phenomenon within the subset of UFOs. And I'm just so honored to have the filmmaker, Randall Nickerson, here today to talk with us about his new film, Aerial Phenomenon. As you guys know, I am all about the human side of these possibly non-human experiences, how it affects people, how it impacts their lives. And this film embodies that more than I possibly could ever convey. So I'm really excited to talk to Randall today. But before we do that, let's bring our co-host in for tonight. She is my co-pilot here on Somewhere in the Skies. You know her, you love her. Chrissy, how you doing?
Hey, good. How are you?
I'm good. Now you just had Randall on The Debrief recently on Rebelliously Curious. So I'm excited to have you here too to maybe cover what you weren't able to cover over there.
Yeah, me too. I love this story just as much as you do. I think it's my favorite UFO story. And I was just saying that to Randall too. So getting to ask him other questions I didn't get to ask before is fabulous.
I know. That's the perks of being a co-host for like a million shows, right?
Yeah.
Well, the other thing too is, you know, I even tweeted this out at one point. I try to remain very objective on the show when it comes to, you know, promoting films or books or stuff like that. I want to be journalistic. I want to take that objective approach. But it was so damn hard with this film because it blew me away. And after watching it, I haven't felt that way about a UFO documentary in a very long time. So I'm going to be fanboying out tonight. I don't care what anyone says, but we got some, I hope, some challenging questions as well for Randall. So yeah, I guess let's bring him in. What do you say?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. Randall, welcome to Somewhere in the Skies.
Hey guys, pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. I know you've been a busy man. The film released, maybe a little less than 48 hours ago or so. So I know you're making the rounds right now. So we do really appreciate you making the time to do this.
No, that's no problem. I appreciate it. Yeah, I can't believe it was 48 hours ago. It seems like 2 weeks, to be honest.
I know that a lot of people out there have been waiting. Yeah. And I'm sure you've heard that a million times. But my God, man, like, talk about worth the wait. Again, like, we're going to go through some of the specifics of the film, but I'm seeing the chatter all over Twitter already, and everyone's just like, wow, not what I expected, more than I ever could have expected. And the chat's blowing up here, too. Everyone's really excited. So I guess, you know, let's give the folks at home who aren't too familiar with the case a little rundown. Now, we have a case that happened in 1994 in Rua, Zimbabwe, where 62 school children claim to have had a close encounter of something. I know they all have varying opinions on what that was, what they each experienced individually. But this has really become one of the quintessential cases that a lot of UFO researchers go to for credible witnesses, documentation, and even a Harvard psychiatrist becoming attached to this. So that's a lot to kind of That's kind of a very Cliff Notes version of this entire story. But before we really dive into what the kids saw, how did you get involved with this? I have to ask. I know you have in the past talked about experiences of your own. If that's something you're willing to talk about, that's great. If not, we understand. But where did your interest in UFOs really start, and what got you hooked on the Ariel case?
Actually, I wasn't interested in UFOs at all when I saw what I saw, so to speak. And I can't really talk too much about it. Some things have happened in the last 24 hours that I can't talk about my story, which is, I don't want it anyway. I want to talk about the film, to be honest with you. I mean, any question. There's certain things I can't talk about right now, which is, I can't even believe that. But anyway, so Ariel is, I saw the footage back in 1995 at a meeting John Mack was doing. And then I saw those kids' faces and I'm like, they're telling the truth. Like instinctually, I knew that. And it wasn't until 2007 that I got the opportunity to actually make a film about it. And I tried to do it alone for 5 years. I figured, yeah, I can do it. And then I hired, brought on as a contractor, Chris Seward, brought on Rebecca Ride, Ann Kronowski, Rebecca Rideout, Rick. Thank God. They've been an amazing crew, really. And they taught me a lot of lessons as a filmmaker. And so that's the basic story. I mean, we'll be here for weeks, to be honest with you, if I tell you everything. It's really, wow, what a journey for almost 15 years.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, worth the wait. And I don't say that lightly. This space of UFOs within the UFO sphere, documentaries tend to be a little iffy in this space. I'm sure you know that. And it doesn't paint this topic in a very credible light. And that's unfortunate, because a case like this deserves something like what you did. And I know a lot of that footage, archival footage, was obtained by someone, I believe, with the BBC. Is that something you can touch on how you got a lot of this footage of the first person on site when this event actually happened in 94?
Well, the first thing I had was just Dr. Mack's footage, which, of course, was fascinating. You can't tell a story with just one piece of evidence, right? Which I realized, and I'm like, well, I have to find the school. Which I did. Nikki Carter was amazing, a journalist, producer in Africa. She was amazing. She helped me find the school. And then I found out the BBC was there. Then it took me 2 years to find the war reporter. It took me 2 years to find him. Wow. And in the meantime, I was getting footage from other people that were there, which I didn't even know they filmed this at the time, back in 08, 09. And over the years, like, I'm still getting things in the email today, like more evidentiary documentation, more pictures, more, you know, little snippets of interviews. I'm like, oh, gosh, I don't have that. It's just amazing, because people haven't come forward in the way, like with a normal story, you'd probably get. But since it's about this, people are a little more hesitant, you know, but it was all the other archival and meeting the other reporters, journalists that were really good journalists, that their take, because they were there. They saw these kids at that time in those circumstances. I mean, the one person that needs to be interviewed is the cameraman, because he works for National Geographic a lot. He's an amazing cinematographer. And I talked to him yesterday and I'm like, are you willing to speak? Because your testimony is important, because he's a wildlife guy and he walked around that property and he'll tell you something was not right with the nature on that site. He will tell you that. You have to ask him. I won't speak for him, but anyway.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Talk about like trace evidence. I mean, we hear that a lot, you know, wildlife in areas being affected, automobiles, planes, radios, this, that. That's, hopefully you can bring him forward for us sometime.
I'm going to, I told him, would you be willing to go on a show with me? And he said, absolutely.
That's a great idea.
Everybody I asked is the same way. Absolutely. And I was like, thank you. Thank you so much for coming forward. Thank you. Because it's hard. It's been hard in the past for people to come forward. And, you know, Ariel School is a very significant incident, but there are many others around the world that need to be. The problem is those incidents aren't even known because people are afraid to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Right. And I do want to touch on that a little later with you, Randall, these other schoolyard incidents, well, because that's...
Schoolyards is one thing, but just anyone.
Right.
They're, you know, adults, doesn't matter. People have had encounters with these things and they're not talking about it.
Right. And I'm so glad you gave all of these witnesses that voice, because I know a lot of them were very hesitant for many years to talk about it. I've spoken to several of the witnesses and it's hard. It's hard to get them to be interviewed. And I know it couldn't have been easy to kind of gain their trust and tell their stories specifically. And we'll touch on this a little later. Emily Trim, kind of the individual you decided to kind of put a microscope on in the film, which I thought was brilliant, to follow the journey of one of these witnesses, one of the 62, and how it affected their lives. Because I would assume it affected all of them very, very differently in many different ways.
Can I just commend Emily for her bravery?
Yeah.
I mean, that woman, I'm telling you, wow. She stepped up.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's been hard for everybody. And I got to just give out respect to the people that have spoken up more. You know, it's not me. They're doing it. And I just salute them for their bravery, period.
Absolutely,
how is
man.
Emily
I say
right
the,
now, Randall?
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chrissy.
Yeah, I was just going to see how is Emily right now after all of this?
I think she's okay. She's wanting to be pretty quiet right now. She's got a lot of people trying to get an interview with her and all this. And I have to respect her. She's already done her work. You know what I mean? There's plenty of other kids that can speak. What she did was amazing. She allowed me to travel with her back to that place that happened and let me record that. That doesn't happen every day.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah. So I'm honored that I had that opportunity. I'm honored for her bravery and the other children's bravery. Lisa, you know, all these people, Emma, they were brave.
Yeah. I know. Was the other thing. I was very impressed with the amount of witnesses you were able to track down. I can't assume that was easy. I'm sure it took a long time. And to even get them to go on camera, I'm sure was a challenge in itself. But again, you had such a diverse school. You know, you had children from all over the place that went to this school, Ariel, in Rua, and probably all different belief systems. And then, boom, this quote-unquote UFO encounter literally, like, falls into their laps. And even as children, I'm sure, changed their entire outlook on everything they'd probably been taught or not taught or told not to look into or believe in. So... Yeah. I know Emily in specific, this was very hard. You can tell by the look on her face in this one still from your film. But Chrissy, please, anything you have from there.
Yeah, and just to follow up on that, why did you choose Emily? You know, there's so many students that you could follow different stories and different timelines of their lives and where they've been. And a fair amount, I think a few of them are in Canada from what I know. And Emily is one of them in Toronto or around Toronto. Mm-hmm. But why Emily?
To be honest with you, she was in process, right? She was coming to terms with what had happened to her while I met her. She was one of the ones that had not really processed it. Was just beginning to process it. And that's why I wanted to follow her, because it was happening. Her process was happening in real time. That's really why it was Emily. Cause what was happening was going on, and other kids had come to a resolution in themselves, or they came to a place where it wasn't so pressing. So that was the, that was the reason.
Gotcha. Now, Randall, what about a lot of the skeptics out there like to turn to, you know, the same old explanations for mass UFO sightings. It's some sort of collective hallucination or mass hysteria, or one of these kids, you know, the old game of phone tag or whatnot. Like, the story builds as each kid whispers it to one another. What do you say to these people who say that this was the kids making it up? I mean, they were journalists, not the ones that you featured in the film, but others who went right to the school and, like, told these kids, you're making this up. Mm-hmm. And they're crying at these adults telling them, no, we're not. We saw this. Like, what would you say to the skeptics who use these sort of mundane explanations? Yeah.
Do your research. I mean, really, if you're going to say things about something you don't understand or haven't done your work to understand, to look at, I'm not even saying to believe it or not believe it, but do your diligent work. If you just have some opinion, and a lot of times this is what I run into, is people's our inability to comprehend or even allow the thought that this could have happened to enter their brains, right? That's the first problem. And then the second problem that I've seen is people don't do their research. They don't even know what they're talking about. I mean, it's like, okay. So, I mean, I went to psychiatrists, psychologists, several people to get their take on the archival. I said to them, are these kids telling the truth? Body language, da-da-da-da, eye movement, facial, all that stuff. And everybody I took it to, and I these are not UFO people at all, said these people are telling the truth. They couldn't comment on what they saw, but they said they're telling the truth. Because I needed that external intelligence or whatever, you know, advice from people that worked in these fields. You know, that's, you know, psychiatry, investigations, detective work, detectives. So school teachers, pediatric nurses that work with kids. That's what I did to get that kind of, you know, read on all these kids. Right. And I've got, you know, the amount of clips that are in the film is a small amount in the amount of actual interviews I have. I think I have not every single person, because there were kids that were not interviewed. But I've been on the phone with 43. And just to let you know, most of those people told me what happened, but would not go on camera. Just telling you, like, the majority of the witnesses in this case told me the story personally, but would not go on camera for fear what it would do to their family, their jobs, their friends, unfortunately. But hopefully times have changed.
Really. Right. And I do want to touch on that, too. Sort of this new modern UFO era we're living in ever since the New York Times and all that. But I guess to rewind just a little bit, and then, Chrissy, I'd love for you to take it after this. You brought up something in the beginning of the film that really caught me off guard, and I never even thought about this. Other events happening in the same areas around this time. It was amazing that you were able to find news, archival news footage of UFO events. Could you briefly touch on that for us, these other things that could be connected to this event? But if not, there's still other UFO activity happening in Rua at the same time.
Correct. I mean, that was very much a surprise to me, because I thought, I thought it was just aerial school. When I got to the Zimbabwe, I started hearing other people came up to me and said, well, we saw something. We were here in this part of Botswana or, you know, Zimbabwe or South Africa or Zambia or Mozambique, whatever country. I started to hear all these stories from adults. And some of them shot video. Some of them were RAF pilots, airline pilots, two radar people from South Africa and also from Mexico City that night. Mm. It was going across the Atlantic Ocean toward Africa on the 15th that night. So he testified in 2001 at the press club, FYI. Okay. So there's a ton. And I've done at least 100 interviews of all these other people that were witnesses. So this is just the tip of the iceberg of what was going on there at the time. But this was a significant, unique thing that happened. That was, it was, you know, all their stories, the other people that saw things, though, they all have a story as well. But Ariel seemed to be the biggest event during that time where they actually were on the ground and people saw them. It wasn't just the kids. There were people in the village right next to the kids, the school, also. So,
oh, interesting. Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Forward. I can only tell a certain amount of the story, and then everybody else needs to, if people are ready to come forward, do it. If you're not, don't. You know what I mean? Like, it all depends on how people are, what they feel about it. If you need to talk about it, please speak up. And I'm saying to anyone out there that has had a significant event that it's not about you, you know, it's not about me. It's not about anybody. It's about like all of us. And that's why you speak up, because it's not just about one individual. It's about that. This is important to every single thing on this planet, if this is real. And boy, that's a whole conversation.
Right. Right. You know? Chrissy, yeah. Do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah. Do you feel after this, Randall, that you might start lobbying more for people that have had these experiences, or will this just stay in a space that you're going to keep, you know, doing film and maybe talking about this or other subject as well? But, or is this just right now the mission of that film is to obviously to bring people forward and to give shed light on what's actually happening?
Personally, my mission has been to get this done, to speak up, and hopefully somebody else with the resources and the technology and the attention on the problem takes over, and I can actually just play piano, work on cars, do photography, maybe do another film on wildlife. Honestly, I want somebody else to really, I want to just do my own thing, you know? And not have to speak about it. And thank God for that Senate Intel Committee this oddly last week.
Right.
Is kind of a beginning to that. And I, after watching it five times, I'm like, oh my God, finally, here we go. Here we go. It's just the tip of the iceberg, guys. Really, tip of the iceberg.
You could not have asked for better publicity, you know, right? Around the time your film came out, man. But, well, that brings something up, and I'd love to get your thoughts on that. Sure. I do want to return to John Mack. He is a big part of the film, which I thought was awesome. Like, that was kind of the second journey that you take in the film, is with this Harvard psychiatrist who became very vocal about this case. But do you think, since we have now had congressional hearings for the first time in 50 years on the UFO topic, we are bound to have more, I would assume. The response was very varied on how this first one went, what was discussed. A lot of people want to hear from witnesses, experiencers, the pilots who saw the Tic Tac right. UFO, the children who are in Zimbabwe, or the people who saw the Phoenix Lights. They want to hear from the people who are actually seeing these things, not these military people or intel people giving a very, you know, militaristic view of it or intelligence view of it. Do you think we'll see that? Do you think the Emily Trim will ever be on a congressional floor with other witnesses talking about this?
That room will be full of people, I'll tell you that. And you got to understand, the military is under different law. Really, if you right. understand the military, like, it's just very different than civilians. So I would like to, there's more pilots out there that I've interviewed a couple of them myself, and I think they're willing to talk, but you know, they have certain privileges. How do I say this? They have clearances still, mm-hmm. even though retired. So anyway, but yeah, I think there's a lot of people that can speak up. The most powerful people, in my experience, because I've met them, are the people you would be surprised that have encountered these things. But they're so well known that they don't talk about it. But if all those people did, it would change everything. And they know who they are. I don't have to make anything up. They need to come forward. Please do so. I appreciate it. Everybody will appreciate it when you do. Yeah. But yeah, there's a lot of people that could fill that entire Senate.
Absolutely. And it just takes one. You're right. You're right. Yeah. And the floodgates will open wide. And right. I think we're getting there. Like this topic is becoming a normal part of conversations. I mean, I remember when maybe I talk about this with family or friends once a month or something. And now every day they're emailing me, what's new with the Pentagon and UFOs? What's this new documentary about these kids? What is happening here? And it's awesome, you know, that I can just have these conversations without ever, you know, putting that kind of gloss or mask over it and being like, oh, yeah, I research anomalous things, and then it going no further. Now it's I'm a UFO researcher. What are you going to say? Like, bring it. So I think we're getting there. I think we are. It's inspiring.
Slowly but surely. You know, I thought we wouldn't be having this kind of conversation till I was gone, you know, 90 years old and pushing up daisies. But yeah. Wow. It's been a huge shift since December 2017. And it's slowly, gradually moved, you know, in the mm-hmm. right direction. Finally.
Yeah, finally. And all those wonderful people.
There's been a lot of people speaking up for decades, man, for decades. Yeah. Like back in the 60s, back in the 50s. I mean, it goes way back. It's unfortunate, yeah. But it is a big thing for our species to wrap our heads around. It's going to take time, even from now to what we actually find out. It's going to take us psychologically a jump to wrap our heads around it.
I think you're right. Well, that was one other thing. And Chrissy, I know you can probably piggyback off of this too. The messages the kids were given. Now, in the film, that was very interesting. And we've heard this before, you know, when these close encounters happen, there's always these, I guess premonitions may be the right word, maybe not, but this idea of we're destroying our planet and we don't need aliens to tell us that. We can see it happening every day around us. But these children were told very specific things according to them and their interpretation of what happened. What do you make of the messages these children were given? Is this something you personally believe an extraterrestrial race would want to make us aware of? What do you make of the whole messages these kids were given?
Is that to me?
Yes.
Oh, well, it's awfully relevant. I mean, in 1994, most people didn't believe in any kind of climate change at all. And we're seeing it. Pilots are seeing it. Everybody knows. There's very few people in the world right now, in my opinion, that don't understand we got a problem. So I think about that a fair amount because it does happen to other people outside of Ariel. It wasn't a unique thing. Like, you're right, it's reported in many other incidents. But maybe that's because they are, you know, they see us, we're a biosphere. We're a ball floating in space. And they're coming from outside of that. Their perspective is from an external place. If you talk to people who have gone into space, they'll tell you the same thing. You know,
yeah.
How much they start caring about and how much we don't realize how precious this planet is. And we take it for granted.
Absolutely.
I believe that, you know, this species probably sees that. And all they can communicate to us, because we don't speak their language, is just snapshots of what our future might be in the hopes that we'll change it.
Right. Yeah, Christine, yeah. Take it from there, please.
It's so true. It's agreed. It's very much a reflection of us right now, currently. And that was also in 1994, and it's still very current today. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I asked you in the interview that I did with you too, Randall, about the sounds. And, you know, when I was thinking about it a little bit later on, the flute sound is so distinct than anything we've ever heard before. And when I think about it, this might sound funny to people, but I think of the Pied Piper. like I instantly do with children, like calling children and that fairy tale, or I don't know if it's fairy tale, but the tale of the Pied Piper, you know, warning, I believe the town that he's going to take his children, and he comes and ends up taking them, and the kids then disappear. And that flute sound rings so, so heavy in my head with that story. Do you think that this story then, and maybe other folklore that was happening within Zimbabwe, is the sound, the flute sound, related to any folklore that they might have had or any that you know of?
Well, personally, there was two sounds heard on that day, and it's not right. uncommon. But the, when you, if you, this may sound strange, I don't know, but I'll say it. If you hear that flute sound, you're in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
It's a high flute. Yeah, flute is an easy way to describe it. But if you hear that sound, it's too late. You'll hear the buzzing sound. That's norm. It's not a buzzing sound, but it's an oscillating two-tonal, totally out of sync. And then you hear, and when you hear that high-pitched sound, that's a different, that's, you're in trouble.
And why do you say that?
Oh, I've just talked to many people, other people that have gone through this, and their experiences with those, with the sound alone. Because I'm a pianist, I'm a sound guy, really, like down in my my heart, and I paid attention to sound very carefully, and what people say about sound, because that's, people were interested. You know, John Mack brought that into the, some of the interviews that nobody even thought to ask. Like, what did you hear? Did you taste anything in your mouth? Did you, you know, smell anything? I mean,
smells, yeah.
All the real raw sensory data that you're, we can collect with our bodies. Right. And I'm glad he did. But, you know, there's other stories that corroborate what they said. That's what's stunning. That's why... That's what convinced me a lot about this too, was okay, because I was looking into this story and I was looking at 100 other stories as well and talking to other people and interviewing other people and hearing their accounts. So there's, that's the thing about this whole thing. It's subtle, like, you know, and I got to say the subtlety is absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant, because it's kept us from really seeing it. And I think that's on purpose, personally.
Yeah, that, I get that. I think you're right. These phenomena seem to whisper instead of yell at us a lot. And of course, they probably want us to get it. They want us to figure it out ourselves. And, you know, a part of me appreciates that. And another part of me is like, yeah, but what about these hundreds of people who are traumatized by these events mm-hmm. as well? I know some of the kids, you know, would go on to become very depressed or alcoholics or drug users. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, some became like super inspired by the event and became very, you know, prominent people, civil rights and humanitarian things and environmental stuff and art. So it really is, I think, how each individual carries the weight of that experience with them. I've experienced that too.
Yeah, the weight psychologically is, I mean, unless you go through it, you don't really understand what it's like, and neither does our medical community in psychiatry really understand, because unless they've gone through it themselves, they don't really understand what that does to a person psychologically. Like, you know, it's not something. A lot, you'll see it in the movie. A lot of kids, they'll go to the lower left to go to the memory of what they saw, and they go like this, you know, or they close their eyes really tight because they don't want to look, because it's so disturbing. You know what I mean? And I get that. A lot of people get that. You get that, I think. Yeah. And it's hard. And I think the human psychology part of it and the effect on human psychology, we haven't begun to understand, but we need to, so we can understand what happens to these people, you know,
right.
and include them in the world instead of push, you know, stigmatizing them and, you know, diagnosing them with this and that and this. I mean, you understand, like, in the 70s, they went from, they called these people schizophrenic, false memories, all, I mean, you know, it's always a new diagnosis, but it's never the right one, right? Because mm-hmm. they don't know. And they still don't know. But they get, I think they have to, like John Mack did and others are, take a look at it with just a slight open mind, really. Just a slight open mind.
I like yeah. that.
Do you know, Randall, if any of the children now have had any other experiences as adults?
Hey, guys. Ryan here. The Somewhere in the Skies podcast is a labor of love every week. And with that comes many different costs to keep the show running. That's where our Patreon campaign comes in. You give what you think the show is worth. There's different rewards available all the time, including shoutouts on the show, early editions of main episodes, bonus episodes and content, and very soon, monthly patron hangouts, where we sit back and chat all things UFOs. So I hope you'll consider becoming a Patreon subscriber today. To learn more and to join, visit patreon.com/somewhereskies. Thank you for your support, and keep looking up.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
I can't talk about, I mean, I've been asked specifically not to talk about that from some of the kids, but.
Make of that what you will. Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely. Right. well, let's, you know, again, psychological elephant in the room, John Mack. He was a big part of this case and your film. I'd love to talk about him for just a little bit because you're right. He was the one to kind of really dive into this topic unlike anyone ever had done before with the soft sciences, whether, you know, psychiatry and whatnot. And you also had some really interesting interviews with other members of the Harvard psychiatry board, which was awesome to see both sides. Who thought he was going off the rails and he lost it? And those who said, no, this is a part of science. Like, we need to look into this. We need to ask these questions. What is your take on John Mack involvement with all of this?
I think he was shocked in the beginning to meet with a certain group of people in the beginning, you know, like five or six people that had really close contact. This was before Ariel started. And I think it shocked him because I've talked to people after he came from that meeting that had dinner with him. And it blew his mind, you know, because he knew these people were A, successful, B, normal people in the world, yet they were telling these incredibly bizarre stories. But there was a consistency in the stories. Anyway, so he's just John Mack's journey is the hero's journey, really, because he stood up, he stood up for what he saw clinically, and he says it himself, and that's what he did against the biggest power, against Harvard University and all the Harvard alumni, and I think because John Mack was way ahead of his time as a thinker, he was 20 years down the road. Even at that time, he wasn't interested in keeping up with where everybody else in humanity was at the time. He was interested deeply in finding out what it meant for us.
Yeah. Christy, yep. Do you have anything to add in terms of John Mack's involvement with this and in the documentary?
Yeah, I just think that he was a fabulous human from what I would say and what I've seen. Have you talked to Ralph Blumenthal or anybody else about his research that he's done about John Mack?
Yes, I've sat with Ralph several times. He's a really good guy. I like Ralph a lot.
Yeah. Did you ever cross-reference any of your work or your findings that you did with the children and then along with maybe potentially John Mack that he spoke about and what Ralph learned about?
We talked about it. I don't know. I'm trying to think cross-references. There's always that. It's sort of the subtle things that are people don't talk about too much at all. And that's actually good because it's and John would tell you this, and so would have Bud Hopkins, that those little things become really important when you're investigating because they're so specific and they're so like, you can't pull that out of your imagination. You can't pull, anyway, that's a whole nother story. But I've had the opportunity and pleasure to meet a lot of amazing people during this film, you know, really like all these Harvard emeritus professors and movie star. It's just been, wow.
Yeah.
It's been a journey. I hope I get to tell it, the whole story someday, you know,
we'll get the 6-hour uncut version. Right. That's
what I always tell people, like, you got 2 weeks.
Yeah, right. I can't imagine. That must be so frustrating as a filmmaker. I know you can only fit so much into the time you're allotted in terms of distribution and all of that. But I hope someday you'll be able to tell that full story. But you came pretty damn close here, man. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, this is the most important one, you know, is their story. And, right. And likely I will do, I've got another one, but I think I told Chrissy that I can't even say anything because somebody else will do it if I tell them.
That's so true. Got to keep it in the vault.
I got to, because, but I'm excited about it, you know, now that this is done, it's like, oh, now I can actually think about doing this other one.
Right. Yeah, sure that's a big weight on off of your shoulders, but also like living in the moment, man. Like it's out there, and again, the chat is blowing up. Everyone's already watched it, and it's already been less than 48 hours, which is
that's amazing.
Thank God, thank God.
Yeah. Well, did you fear nobody would watch this? I mean, that could not have come across your mind. There's no
way. Well, I've got to be honest with you, like. And I started off, my uncle, when he died, left me money to put some money into this film. And his name was Byron Canny. And that allowed me to buy the programs, the computers, the cameras to get started and eventually get the first editor. And then, the people that have helped me, my God. But yeah, today I am at over $1 million in debt. That's for real. So if you want to make a documentary, I was like, I'll spend a couple $100,000 most and get it done. But then you run into like, I got to get an attorney. I've got to purchase the rights from these people. it's just one thing after another. And it's like, right. I got to hire another person. I got to hire another editor. It's just, it's just hard. And expensive. People don't realize how expensive it is to make a movie, especially when you're doing it in Africa, you know, overseas. I can make a movie in my own town for whatever, a very little money, but when you start doing international, everything changes. So anyway,
it's a beautiful body of work, Randall. It's a beautiful body of work
being bought, and you know, thank God. On that level, just on a normal level of like, I have to pay my bills, guys.
Yeah. I think people don't realize most filmmakers are lucky to break even.
Oh, yeah. They put everything on credit cards. You get loans. It's like, oh, yep. And then you got to get insurance. Oh, my
God. Well, I'd love to, one more question in terms of the content, Randall. You did, like you said, you went to Zimbabwe several times to film, and you did film Emily meeting with some of the locals. And we hear this a lot, you know, indigenous people in any country have a very strong connection to what maybe they consider star people or another plane or just non-human intelligence. And I found it really interesting, without giving away too much in the film. One of the locals told Emily, like, yeah, we see these things all the time. Like, they visit our grave sites. In fact, one of the grave sites of like one of our like chiefs is right near the aerial school, and UFOs zip in and out of there all the time. So I'd love to get your thoughts on this. Was this a visitation to the children gone wrong? Like, were they trying to visit this site and they accidentally ended up on the schoolyard? Or what do you make of the aerial school event? Was it accidental? Was it on purpose? I know that's a big, broad question, but yeah, if you want to take a minute to work through that extremely vague question.
It's not. It's right on the tip of my tongue because I think about it all the time. But there were three different reasons that I could think of other than a direct visit just to the kids. I actually think that I don't know this for sure. I've just heard from other people that there may have been another reason. I'm not saying that what happened at Ariel wasn't direct, you know, directed, and they approached, you know, from all the witnesses, that creature, whatever it was, approached that playground on purpose. It wasn't an accident. Mm-hmm. That was not an accident. What they were actually there in that area for, that's a question mark. And, anyway, there's other people that will speak about this coming. You'll hear more about this from other people. So, but it's of course a big question, but you have to widen out and use a really wide lens to really answer that question. You understand? Like it's that you got to look at it from something up in the air's perspective.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah. No. And again, like it's going to vary from person to person. I know individuals I've spoken to who have claimed abductions or just experiencers in general. A lot of them think they were chosen. A lot of them think they were, you know, it was a fishing expedition and they just happened to be the one they brought up there. But I always go back to it. It's what you do with it, right?
Exactly. Can I speak to that? Because
please.
Obviously, there's nobody special here. It's happening to thousands of people in every single country on this planet. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter if they're black, white, you know, my God, it's not a race thing. It's not, you know, obviously, and I've looked at this carefully. What's the uniqueness? There isn't any. It's, you know, and I'm not saying it's random, but it doesn't make somebody special, you know?
Yeah.
Really. And it's, the special thing that it does is if you speak up about it to warn your fellow man that we might have a problem. That's mm-hmm. If you want to do that, but anyway, it's just, I've seen a lot of these people that think they're special. Well, I can introduce you to somebody in Japan, China, every single country on this planet that's seen the same thing and they don't feel that way.
Right. That's a solid point. Yeah,
I like that. Yeah, I know. I think we deal with that a lot in this field too.
I'm sure,
sorry, Christy. You know, this idea of like, you know, I'm the one who's here to impart the message. No, these kids are saying what these beings supposedly told them. they're not telling you to believe it. They're not saying this is Bible. They're saying this is what was conveyed to me in my mind when this thing happened. Take it or leave it. Like, it's up to the rest of you to figure it out. So
yeah,
that's what you let them talk. There was no, some documentaries come off very biased, and that's just the way that, you know, that genre can be. There's an angle taken by the filmmaker and, maybe even an agenda. I didn't get that with this. You let the witnesses mm-hmm. speak for themselves, and the story played out as it was. So I really respect that.
Well, I got to say, working with Christopher Seward, my story editor, we wrote together, his advice, and this is what I wanted to do anyway, but he really solidified that, was show your warts. I mean, there every possible thing that is in the film. So it's just show your warts. Don't try to hide anything. Don't try to steer it in a certain direction. You know, let the people tell their story, show the issues. And they are in that movie. I don't, you know, they're small things, but it's like, we got to put it out there because that's part of what happened too. So, but that's what you do, right? I mean, I had kind of a lot more pressure than a normal filmmaker would have because I had to be extremely objective, you know?
Yeah.
Just mm-hmm. because.
Which is hard because, you sure. know, but it's you like, are an experiencer. Like you, right. you understand.
I noticed I could see something like that.
Yeah, exactly. I right. couldn't put it better myself.
Yeah.
Chrissy, do you have any questions you'd like to get to that you didn't get to in your interview?
Yeah, I just think that Randall, like you built a body of work that is very beautiful. And again, like you didn't put yourself into it. You had people tell the stories and they're authentic. Like we see even Emily's, you know, some might say it's a flaw or not, but like smoking, for example, or just the real elements of who she is and her, you know, you didn't put a gloss over it. You really showed, you know, those moments and like if her heart being ripped out or just, you know, seeing people that she didn't have anyone to connect with, people didn't understand her, and giving her that ability to tell her story is something really beautiful. And you did it in a very honest way. And we don't get a lot of film like that anymore. And I appreciate that. And I admire the body of work immensely because I wish more filmmakers would do that. And I think you're in a great example of it.
I hope so too. Like, I think maybe we're going to get to the stage where we actually tell real stories about this instead of the classic UFO, bada, 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 right? It's always the same.
Right.
But honestly, some of these stories, they need to the real story, not trying to prove it, just tell the story. I think we're going to get other people are working on proving it. Let them handle it. But we should start telling people's stories because there's thousands of people. Watch Hollywood after a little while, that once they start to realize this is where, I mean, think about stories in the past that where things were just taboo. And then all of a sudden it became acceptable. And then you started to see real movies about their stories. That's right. What's happening here. I don't know how long that's going to take, but for me personally, I felt what you said, that setting an example, that's what I was trying to do also. Like, this is the way we should tell these stories, because it's just with care and like these are human beings. These are people, man, have families. Like, it's we can't ignore that anymore. The impact.
Yeah. It's not about entertainment. Yeah. Exactly. Anymore. It's we're slowly realizing as these phenomena are gradually, I think, telling us is it's real. Yeah, you have to accept it. There's a million questions after that, but totally. Hey, it's just here. It's happening. Talk about it. I think that's amazing. And you have set a standard. Again, I said, you know, for every aerial phenomenon documentary, there's 1 million UFO documentaries that have no business being out there. And I'm just going to say that, some of which have come out in the past few weeks. And I don't want to cause controversy. I'm not that kind of show. But they do nothing but a disservice to a field that strives for credibility. And like I said, you let your story play out in a very humanistic way. And that's the way it should be done. We don't need to hear about the a million conspiracies and, you know, this and that. And it's just, let's just focus on the people. And again,
a lot of those things are distractions, to be honest. Like, exactly. The bigger story is what's there, what's going on. I think we need to know what's going on for our own interest as a species. We need to understand what that is, what is going on, because if it is a higher intelligence, you know, that's been around, evolved a long time further than us, we should be concerned. And of course, we're not going to see them every day. They're not going to be stupid. So anyway, that's my feeling.
I love it. I love it. I've got just a couple listener questions, Randall, if you don't mind. Yeah, I'll fire through them really quick for you. And then, Chrissy, whatever you got left. But let me ask this one. Neil on Facebook asks, what was the most intriguing thing you learned about the event while making the documentary that you hadn't known before making it? Anything specifically?
There's so many. Yeah. Personally, it was some of the descriptions that the kids gave of particular things, behavioral mannerisms, just very specific things that are in the archival that aren't even in the film, because nobody would have got it. And that's good. You know what I mean? There's all these moments that I wanted in the film, and my editor said, no one's going to get that. No one's going to understand that. I'm like, all right. It's so important to me, because I realized, to me, those were the keys. Those were the keys, because they were so specific details, such specific details that how could anybody know that unless they had, you know, there wasn't anything in the media at that time in 94. It wasn't until 2011. 2012 before some of these facts were actually known, but they knew that in 94.
The beings moving in slow motion, this kind of Oz factor that a lot of witnesses have during these encounters, that was very interesting. Several of the witnesses you interviewed mentioned this, that, you know, they would watch the beings and everything move slow, and the minute they turned their head, everything was back to normal. So, like, right. Oh, that's so interesting to me, but concerning that they seem to have some sort of perception over time, space, the way we perceive them. Very, very, very interesting.
Well, I've had a lot of conversations about this with some people. Likely, like we are, we're so fascinated with black holes, and, you know, that's like the extreme form of gravity. And I'm sure any species in the universe is going to look at black holes and say, we need to figure that out. And learn how to control gravity. We just detected gravity waves, 2 years ago? Mm-hmm. We finally got a physical piece of evidence that gravity is, you know, we documented gravity for the first time, you know, in long form, long wave. My perception, and you will talk to other people, you will hear from other people who are going to speak up, that when you can control gravity, if you can do that on a bigger scale, you can control time. So again, in these reports, you hear the same thing about time being manipulated somehow. The witnesses say somehow time was distorted. And then you have your human perception of time, your interpretation of time.
Right.
That's also a factor, too. Because, like, when you're in a traumatic event, time slows down. You know what I mean? But it actually doesn't slow down. You're taking more photographs because you're in a state of fight or flight. So you're actually recording at a higher rate. When you do that in film, that's called slow motion. So
there you go. Yeah. Very interesting. One last listener question, and then Chrissy, I'm going to let you close this one out because you've been awesome being here with us tonight. Richie through email asks, did speaking to others about their experiences at the school help you process your own experiences? And were there any connections that you found between some of your experiences? I know you can't go into detail, but between you and the children.
Yes. And it was really hard to do this movie. Really, because believe me, the last thing you want to do is think about that. But I had to dive into it because I was like, all right, I'm doing this film. Wow. I mean, literally, I the computer was over there and I just was like, oh, my God, I got to work on it. I don't want to do that.
But I get it. Yeah.
But over time, just to be honest, don't have to even say much. It's just but I it healed. It was healing. And not just for me. I think it was healing for a lot of other people, you know, in the process, the people that were involved in this film, the kids, the parents, the teachers, the adults, the crew, everybody. It was healing for in some way. But particularly, yes, it was not easy. I can tell you that.
I know. I would assume it was a way to build trust, too. These individuals. I mean, when I wrote my first book, I traveled the country interviewing hundreds of witnesses to tell their stories. And I wasn't even ready to tell my story myself. And I struggled for a very long time. It took several conversations with my partner and with my parents to be like, I think I have to do this. You know, I'm telling their stories. It's going to look bad if I do that and don't show that I am a part of this community. I've been there. I've been in your shoes. I've seen these things. So it was hard for me too, but it was the best choice I could have made. Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I mean, I know how hard it is and you do as well. And I just honor you for doing what you're doing because it is not easy.
Yeah. Same, man. Same back to you. I know it's not easy for anyone, especially these kids. Chrissy, anything left you have before we let Randall go and actually get some rest for once in his life?
I just want to say thank you, Randall, for sharing your story and sharing the story of a beautiful film and a whole bunch of children that had just an amazing experience and something that for sure you've been able to now broadcast globally around the world. And I hope a lot of people purchase it. And with that said, where can they buy it? Where can they go and purchase Aerial Phenomenon?
Aerialphenomenon.com. It's AREIEL phenomenon, which is PHE. I didn't know this word before I did this film. Oh, by the way, the title of this film came from one of the kids.
Oh, really? No. Which one? Can you share
his
that?
His name is Shava.
Okay.
And he's the one at the end of the movie where he talks about, you know, if there's any day I would like to relive, it would be that particular day. That man named the film on camera. We're doing the interview and he's like, you should call it Aerial Phenomenon. So it wasn't even me that came up with that title. He did. Thank you so much because he was right on with that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I love that. I know because when I first heard the title, I'm like, did he just spell Aerial wrong? And then I'm like, oh, duh, Ryan. It's the name of the damn school. Come on.
I hope I'm not going to like confuse people now with their spelling of like an Aerial.
No, you know? It's a wonderful title. I honestly, I couldn't look at this film the same way without that title now. It's forever linked and we have that witness to thank. I love that.
Yeah.
I absolutely
he'll talk at some point too. I don't know.
Cool, man. Well, we have to thank you again. I know you're just now starting to do the interviews. Film's out. People are loving it. I highly suggest everyone check it out. You can rent it again at aerialphenomenon.com. I know there's other plans for the film in the future, so we'll have to get you back on to talk about that. Maybe there'll be some extended versions and whatnot, but thank you. Randall, thank you for making this film. This feel desperately needed this. And again, it's going to be the gold standard for a lot of these documentaries moving forward, in my personal opinion.
That would be wonderful.
Awesome.
I appreciate it very much, guys. I really do.
Thank you. Thank you. We're going to let you go and talk a little bit here with the audience, Randall. But have a great night. And again, congratulations on the film.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Take care. Wow.
It's such a good film.
I don't like to fan out, especially when we're trying to be objective journalists. But I mean, when there's a film that deserves praise, I think it's okay to do that. And this was one of them. The last film, Chrissy, I don't know if you saw this one. It was called Witness to Another World or Witness of Another World. It was an Argentinian documentary and about an experiencer. And it was a beautiful film. And watching this, they're very different. Let me be very clear about that. But that humanistic side of it, showing the people, putting a microscope on them, how it affected them, is, again, that's what I'm about. That's my ufology, as Ryan Sprague. And this film truly spoke to me. So, yeah. What'd you think?
I'm in the same boat. I thought it was beautiful. There was a lot of those little nuggets, too, that I loved about the way that they moved. And he just shed light on certain aspects that we didn't know, but then also showed this beautiful story of Emily and then just her struggle and then her development over time from being a child to where she is now. And that amazing art that she has. I believe she might be selling it. And I forgot to ask this to Randall too, but just to plug Emily's art, I think she's selling it at aerialphenomenon.com too in their merch shop at one point. I think that will happen. Yeah. So please, people, take a look at that. And she lives in Toronto, and I'm going to see if I can get a piece myself, because I just find it, when I'm a personal fan of art, and when I look at it in fine art, when I look at it, you can tell that she's is expressing so much coming out of her. And there's a lot of truth to that art, I feel. So it's really unbelievable. And she's wonderful. And I think that Randall just captured her essence and her spirit unbelievably. Yeah.
Absolutely. And again, I think it was very smart to kind of take it from one person's journey. I'm glad there were other witnesses in here, but Emily is kind of the epitome of how these events affect you in negative ways and positive ways. Going back, I can't imagine that was easy. I'm sure it was closure for her, especially when the teachers vindicated this for her and said, oh yeah, the alien thing. Yes, of course. And meeting with the other witnesses and being like, I remember this. I remember this. Cross-referencing their drawings together and just having these moments of just pure vulnerability. I wish we saw more of that in documentaries that interview abductees and stuff like that. Because it's just such a big part of this. We don't think about what happens after the event a lot of the time.
Right. Yeah. And there's so much trauma. And I asked Randall off mic as well. I asked him, I felt that in that doc that Emily wanted to go back and live in Africa. That's what I felt. Right. I could feel this calling for her to go back and live there. And that's maybe the space that she would stay in. And Randall said that was something that she was considering after. So it's, it's really,
there you go.
It's so beautiful that he captured all of that. And, and it bled through, to me it did. And that's what I felt. And he captured a very beautiful spirit of Africa too, because Africa is an amazing continent that a lot of people, don't get to go to or don't go to or don't know enough about, and all the different countries. But it's really unbelievable. And there's so many stories about UFOs in Africa that we just have not uncovered yet. And I think that Randall really started that, and he will hopefully tell more. And I really hope he does. Yeah.
Me too. And, we shouldn't be remiss to not highlight the work of Cynthia Hines, one of the only UFO researchers in Africa who was featured in the film. It was so great to hear from her, because you're right. Female researchers specifically, their voices are often not heard, and it's very unfortunate. And other countries as well. This is a very, the West seems to have kind of a monopoly on all of this. So it's so awesome to finally see a case, not in the United States or even Canada for that matter, being highlighted. And it's very credible and it's very powerful. And we now have this film to kind of immortalize that in so much.
Yeah. And I think it will. I agree. And it's a beautiful body of work that I think more people will consume over time. And it's just the beginning. As this conversation for experiencers starts to unravel, people will go back to this film and reference it, I think. And that's, you know, it's, I think you get a cult following that becomes something bigger than it, than maybe Randall ever thought it would be as he gets older as well. And all of us get older. So,
yep.
So let's see what happens in the next 10 to 20 years or 30 to 50 years, right?
Exactly.
See, when we're 90, what happens? Exactly. Ryan and I will still be doing this podcast.
Yeah. Like, oh, did they figure it out yet? So done with this. All right, Chrissy. Well, hey, I've kept you longer than I promised. So thank you for joining us again, as always. Your interview was an inspiration for this one. I'm glad we got to tackle new ground with Randall. And I know he's doing a lot more interviews in the very near future, but you are going to be very busy as well. Can you tell us a little about what comes next for you? You're like globetrotting now. You're like this famous ufologist going all over the world.
You're, so I would tell say us you a little more, more people, I think, know about you than my work, right?
Yeah.
And also your book, too. That's also something else. How many books get picked up and go, oh, my God. Like that.
Oh, my gosh.
That is that, unbelievable.
Yeah. Unbelievable. We'll save that for another episode. But, yes, Somewhere in the Skies will be taught in a college university. I can't believe I'm saying that.
It's a, when I saw
welcome
that,
to 2022, like, everybody.
It's like, my friend's amazing. He's like, he's literally going down into textbooks. I'm like, it's just, it's unbelievable. Overcoming textbooks. I think it's amazing.
I'm going to outlive myself. I love it. That's all we can ask for in this life is to leave an impression somehow, some way.
Yeah, it's so great.
Yeah. And the next, what do you got coming up?
This week, I'll be at the UFO Disclosure Symposium. So I will be covering all of the stuff that's going to be going on there with the debrief. Myself, Micah Hanks will be hosting it. And there is a panel with some unseen footage that will be disclosed. And we will be there covering it. And we will be there talking about it. So please follow along at Chrissy Newton on Twitter. I'll be there at Being Chrissy Newton on Instagram. But we will for sure be covering all of the debrief. We'll be covering all of that news, and we're really excited about it. So
hey, for those of you out there who say there's not stuff still to be seen in 2022 with UFOs, and I don't hype things often, but hold on to your butts, because you're gonna see some videos and stuff that you have been asking for. So I'm excited to see what you guys come up with. Hopefully we can get some correspondence with you and Micah while you're over there or shortly after, and talk about what is revealed at this event. I'm super excited for that. And one more time, if you don't mind, where can we find everything you're up to?
Yep, for sure. I go to, I forgot the debrief, thedebrief.org. My brain decided to freeze there. Thedebrief.org, Twitter, Chrissy Newton, and then Instagram, Being Chrissy Newton. And that's it. And then my podcast outside of doing this with Ryan is Rebelliously Curious with Chrissy Newton. But I'm super looking forward to going to Utah. I've never been either. So I'm just looking forward to.
Me either.
Maybe I'll be walking around Skinwalker Ranch or anything else. So just stay tuned. There's some fun stuff coming out. So we'll see what happens. Yeah.
Bring your teaser. Cowboy boots.
Bring your cowboy boots. I'm bringing my cowboy hat. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And we should mention also, you and I were just featured in a panel discussion on the congressional UFO hearings. So if anyone hasn't watched that, head on over to Den of Geek on YouTube. You can watch our full panel discussion with me, Chrissy, Aaron Sagers, Lee Spiegel, Alejandro Rojas, and Ben Hansen. It was crazy how we were able to wrangle this thing together, but we did, and we gave our personal thoughts on the congressional hearings. So yeah, please check that out at Den of Geek on YouTube as well. But with that, Chrissy, thank you. And we'll talk to you soon.
That sounds good. Have a good night.
Awesome. Take care. And then there was one. Oh, I love that. I love when Chrissy's able to join us, guys, because she is just a powerhouse when it comes to interviews. And I really do have her to thank for a lot of the questions you heard tonight and in our past interviews, and for setting them up. Like, she's just so good. It's her job. It's literally her job in life, doing PR. And she's just done an incredible job since she's hopped on here at Somewhere in the Sky. So a special thanks to her, to Randall, to everyone involved with the film, everyone for allowing us to see the advanced screeners, to finally getting it out to the world. Again, you can check it out at aerialphenomenon.com to rent right now. I know there will be other options in the future, maybe on different platforms. But for now, please support Randall's work. He has spent over 10, 15 years working on this film. And I can honestly say it has been worth the wait. So please check that out. We got some cool stuff coming up on Somewhere in the Skies. Like I said, Christy's going out to Utah next week for, I can't say much. And as much as I'd like to, I just simply can't. I'm under an NDA, but you're going to see brand new UFO videos in the very near future that are going to premiere at this event. And a lot of very interesting people and analysts to look at them and to show you what we're looking at, what we could be looking at, and what is being displayed. So stay tuned to Somewhere in the Skies in the very near future, and hopefully we'll be able to get some of those people on to talk about it and check out these videos that you're going to be seeing very, very soon. Other than that, show is available wherever you get your podcasts. And tell a friend. This topic is more normal than ever, so you would be surprised how many people come up to me every day who have never thought about UFOs and now are like, Ryan, you have something to do with that topic, right? You're like kind of into it. And I'm like, yeah, I dedicate about, 23 hours a day out of 24 hours to this topic. So yeah, I do have kind of an interest in it. So please share it with your friends, your family, your coworkers, and let's normalize this topic. And again, that's what this documentary has done. So check it out, aerialphenomenon.com. Check us out at somewhereintheskies.com. And we're on Twitter at Somewhere Skies, Instagram at Somewhere Skies Pod. And if you want bonus content from Somewhere in the Skies, bonus episodes, early releases of episodes, exclusive interviews, and a lot of other stuff like that, you can join our Patreon. And that's just at patreon.com/somewhereskies. So with that, thank you. Thank you for your unwavering support of the channel, of the podcast, and we will see you next week, guys. Remember, keep your feet on the ground, but never stop searching Somewhere in the Skies.
Somewhere in the Skies is produced by Third Kind Productions in association with the Entertainment One Podcast Network.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.